VentureCast.
There's a change happening in the way we live, the way we work, the way we spend our money and make our decisions. We are evolving to be more conscious in our actions in a way that serves the world and makes it a better place. Welcome to The Ethical Evolution. The Ethical Evolution podcast is brought to you by the Ethical Change Agency. I'm Bindi, CEO and founder, and I am honoured to bring you the stories of those who create change through paying it forward and giving back. Ethical business owners and holistic healers who are determined to create collective change in the world. Once we have a change in consciousness and through collective change, we can become one. Words don't often fail me, but on reflection, in this episode, there are no words to describe what happened here. I found my next guest in a long list of suggested guests, and she stood out to me as being someone I was compelled to speak to. Like, the universe guided me straight to her. I saw her mission and the work she did, and it was enough for me to reach out. The more I learned about her, the more it became glaringly obvious that there are no coincidences, just divine guidance. Dr. Ronae Calvert is the Executive Director of Live Treatment Concierge Services and Revive Recovery and Detox Services in Los Angeles. She's a clinical psychologist who has extensive experience working in the addiction and recovery field and the LGBTQ plus community. Her personal philosophy is not to help clients see what's wrong with them, but rather to help them acknowledge and embrace what's right with them. Through the concierge services, her team go to the places where their clients are most comfortable, whether it's on a surfboard, in the workplace, or at home, for treatment that's customized and unique to each person's circumstance. Avid viewers of the Dr. Phil show may have seen her clinic featured in helping people heal their trauma and transform. While I didn't quite sign up for a consult with Dr. Ronae, I feel like I too have been transformed from this connection and conversation. So sit back and enjoy this raw and real discovery of recovery. Welcome, Ronae, to The Ethical Evolution.
Thank you so much. So happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
You are so welcome, and I am so excited to be connecting with you today. Now, can you tell us about who you are and what you do?
Absolutely. So I am a doctor of psychology. I am a two-time CEO. I am CEO of a brick-and-mortar, amazing detoxification and recovery center for those struggling with drug abuse and dual diagnosis mental health issues. I am also very active in, you know, in both companies, active CEO of Live Treatment, which is a concierge wraparound program, basically meeting people in their homes. Not getting too far ahead of myself now into other parts of this conversation, but, you know, also meeting internationally.
Yep.
Now with the quote unquote gift of COVID, you know, truly making lemonade out of lemons, really wrapping around people who otherwise, you know, we would go internationally to see and be in their environment, meet them where they are, where they live in their space. Now we're able to do that from across the internet, and create those connections, even more so internationally than ever before.
Yeah. And I think it's super cool. Like what you do, that differentiates you from other, people in your field is that you basically go to where the people are most comfortable. So if they're out having a surf, you're out there with them, or out skateboarding or whatever it is, you're in where their environment where they're comfortable, which I think is so cool, and it sets people at ease so that they can open up.
That's exactly right. I'm so glad that you have the understanding of that. You know, when I first originated that idea here in California, Los Angeles, California. It was in 2012. And at the time, it would take me about 15 minutes to explain what that looked like and what that meant. Because, so where's your office? We have offices, yes. Okay, but you're with us? Yeah, yes, we're with you. Okay. And now it's just kind of become, you know, the idea of concierge work, the idea of concierge programs. This originated so much before me. I mean, we're talking about community, the community model, right? Which actually was based upon people who were reintegrating into society from having been institutionalized or in the prison system.
Yeah.
And what we knew then was that they couldn't actually integrate into a world where they had not been living without guides, right? So really the entire foundation behind everything I do, or if I had to say it in a nutshell, is that without purpose, without passion, there really is no life. And so we go with where there is a purpose, we go with where there is a passion, and we follow that to the nth degree. And where there isn't one, we help people find one. I think that's really the basis, the kind of the core of a lot of what we do. That and all the medical, scientific, wellness stuff that goes along with it. But in terms of the spirit of this thing is driven by the idea of a purpose and a passion of a life worth living.
Oh, that's so good. And I reckon you'd probably get better results with people in that kind of setting. Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you mentioned, I think you're so spot on when you said, you know, you go to where they're most comfortable. We also go to where they're least comfortable. Yeah. So for example, you know, people are least comfortable reentering a situation, in a work environment, let's say. And our idea and the concept behind all of this is that we kind of blend seamlessly. You know, no one knows who I am when I'm either on set with a person, or at lunch with a person, or on a surfboard with a person. And by the way, I'm an awful surfer. a lot of times it's just fun for my clients to watch me eat dirt and experience the idea that I'm human and willing to try something that I'm not perfect at and try again. It's about being human beings together and learning how to live this life without shame. Without secrecy, and to take life as it comes, on life's terms. So whether that's the work environment where they need us, whether it's in their home environment that they need us, whatever it takes to have somebody who otherwise, and the idea here, at least in the U.S., and you can educate me really, truly, if this kind of, you know, crosses into where you are. I'm learning so much more about, you know, parts of the nation, in parts of the world, rather than the nation that I haven't traveled to, that I haven't been to during this period of time than ever before, which is a true It's awakening. It's amazing. It's challenging, but in all the right ways. I love a good challenge. But here, the way insurance works and the way that kind of our system has worked is that someone will get quote unquote institutionalized, if you will, meaning they will live in a particular setting away from everything that they know. And they will complete a program amongst other individuals, that is really meant for the group, not for the individual. And it'll be something like 30, 60, or 90 days. And then they will be stepped down into something that looks very, very different from that level of containment. And they're kind of left to doggy paddle it and to figure that out. And that's really, you know, after years and years of clinically directing and executive directing programs like that, and watching these people put a life together and put everything on the line and their families putting everything on the line to afford this treatment, to afford the insurance that afforded this treatment, to then watch them leave even with that success under their belt and really have nothing to return to that could even begin to help them put the pieces of a life back together. and in many cases, especially with this opiate epidemic, start a life for the first time.
Yeah.
So there wasn't anything to return to. Mm. There was just something that needed to be created.
Yeah.
And that's even harder to do because you're not returning to a job that you put on hold and that you're returning to a life where there's 2 to 3 hours of group treatment a day. And then you've got another 22 hours of your day that you need to fill, 20 hours, 17 hours, however many hours you sleep in a night, completely on your own.
Yeah.
And what could the success rate really be with that?
Exactly.
Honestly.
And in comparison, if you look at, you know, those institutions where people go into, say, a 90-day program or something like that, that doesn't mirror real life. So when they come out, how the hell are they going to cope?
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Mm. And I think, you know, when I was directing treatment at that level, you know, aftercare programming and things of that nature and having people step down to the best possible care that they could, the best possible care that their insurance could provide and the best possible care that they could afford, you know, by any means necessary, right? The right sober living environment, the right mental health environment, you name it.
Mm.
What did not happen were those major gaps in life. And literally like the day to day, you know, programs, of course, very different. They're very, very different. Some programs are very behaviorally based. And so you're waking up, you're making your bed, you're doing all these things. Okay. That's one way.
Mm.
There are other programs where you have a maid, you have a chef, they come in, they do all these things for you. Either way, it doesn't mirror real life when you go home.
No.
You know,
way.
And it falls apart and there's nothing to kind of piece it back together. And what we find is that clients internalize that as being their own failure because they think to themselves, my God, you know, my family just invested this amount of time and money. Why can't I get it? Mm. And the reality is that the failure is built into the model.
Yeah.
It's not why can't you get it? It's why didn't we get it as a treatment industry? Why didn't we get it? As a clinical industry, as a medically and socially based industry, why have we not figured out that this does not work?
Yeah. And, you know, as you were talking, I was thinking as well, you know, instead of these cookie cutter type of programs where we've got something that's customized to the person and their situation, it's just the same as like exercise or weight loss or whatever it might be. You can't just have this cookie cutter out of the box program for everyone because nobody is the same.
No,
yeah.
No, nobody is the same. And my least favorite word that we love to use in the treatment industry, which I hate the word industry, by the way, too, when it comes to what we do. But it is, you know, it is a quote unquote business of sorts. You know, I can't be a CEO of nothing. So it is a business. That being said, you know, what constitutes what a business is and whether or not it's client centered. My least favorite word, because it is so overused and it is so not what it actually represents, is the word individualized.
Mm.
Individualized when you are part of a 30 or 40 person program means you get to decide on, do you want to do yoga or do you want to paint? Do you want to go to a trauma centered group today? Or do you want to go to, you know, or do you want to do equine therapy? There's not really anything individualized about it. The word individualized means individual. So how can that happen if I'm not taking into account everything about you, the person, the individual? And ultimately, really, how can that happen if I am maintaining total control of your life?
Yeah.
And these are not decisions that we're making together. These are not decisions that have your input. You're walking into something that's already set up for you. And you're molding yourself to that. There's a purpose and a need for that for someone who's never experienced treatment before to say, I need some sort of structure to this. I have no idea what I'm doing.
Mm.
But there's also a purpose and a need to listen and to learn. Hey, unique, not like anybody else in this world. What do you want?
Mm.
You know, do you actually, are you just yesing and ahhing your way through groups to get through this? Or is this resonating with you? Or have we not bothered to ask that question because we're too scared to find out that the answer is no? Because if it's not resonating with you, we don't really have an answer as to how to fix that.
Yeah. Now, excuse me. We were talking off air about, you know, the way the world is at the moment, 2020, let's just call it, you know, the pandemic and a whole bunch of other things, particularly in the US, that are going on. Are you seeing a shift in the kind of treatment you now have to do and the patients that you're now getting? Because I know here a lot of people are drinking more because they're at home more. You know, they've been locked away. So, you know, substance abuse is more prevalent this year than it has been. Are you seeing more of that?
Absolutely.
Mm.
Absolutely we are. It is, you know, when this first happened, you know, kind of getting back to that, I like making lemonade out of lemons idea.
Mm.
My hope, right? And it still remains a hope. I think it's a little bit of a silver lining here, right? Is that we understand how much community actually means, that we understand how much we actually need, desire, more importantly, need, even when we don't want, human connection.
Yeah.
That we need connection. And while all connection, being with a friend who maybe we hadn't seen in weeks or maybe months, and both cell phones are out on the table, and we're, oh, just give me 1 second. It's my nanny. You know, the idea of longing to be in a position where you could just see your friend face. You know, I just imagine this world where people wanted to smash their cell phones and go give someone a hug.
Yep.
You know, what is happening now is that, you know, recovery, whether it's one-to-one in a team-based approach like what we have, which is definitely its own community, right? But especially those that have, you know, relied upon, you know, the social-based recovery, you know, model that is AA, NA, you name it. Doing it on Zoom is not the same. You know, just not having the, when your life changes, right? Especially if you are a person of routine, especially if you are a person who has kind of gotten their life organized and figured out, it's like, oh, okay, I go, I exercise here. I work here. I call my sponsor on this day. If you're part of a program, I meet with my therapist this many times a week. And all that gets flipped upside down. You know, people are just feeling very, very lost, and they're feeling, like the more they listen to the news, the radio, regardless of what station you're turning into, you're tuning into, there are more questions than there are answers every time.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, you know, when I have clients come to me and they're saying to me, you know, I feel upside down. I feel like I don't know what's going on. I feel like I'm kind of floating, and I just need something to hold on to. And every single time I do turn on the television, or I do turn on the radio, or I am listening to, you know, just even a podcast, the idea that, you know, ads will come up, you know, even during that are for, hey, you know, big sale on alcohol. You can, you know, order right to your house right now. I mean, the ads they're pushing are huge at the moment. And when you're in pain, and when you are alone, and when you're used to years and years of coping by numbing that pain, and you don't know when the pain is going to end, it's never been more important to say, hey, knock, knock, just want to let you know, while you're getting that advertisement for, you know, wine or vodka or pot or whatever else might be coming through. Knock, knock. Here's an advertisement for I love you. Here's an advertisement for you matter. Here's an advertisement for you're not alone. Here's an advertisement for this too shall pass. Here's an advertisement for in your little world. Reach out to somebody today by phone, by Zoom, however you need to, and remind yourself they exist, and remind yourself that they're alive, and remind yourself that they care, that they care about you too. And so, you know, yeah, have things changed? Definitely. People are reaching out. People are needing to see different mirrors held up to them. Because when you're looking at yourself in the mirror every day, and what you're seeing is alone, afraid, desperate, depressed, and you have no mirror up that anyone else is holding up to you that says, hey, you know what? You're actually also super funny. And you know what? You're actually super talented. And you know what? It wasn't actually that long ago that you had this plan about this thing that you wanted to do and get started on. And hey, you know what? Maybe we just need to like check in like, you know, every couple of days and just remind ourselves that, you know, we're still here. And that most importantly, I think that the most important message that I can impart to my clients right now and those reaching out to me is if you're surviving right now, and you're talking about things right now, that is about the most heroic thing that you could be doing.
Absolutely.
It's heroic. It's courageous. It's necessary. And it's really kind of the only way out, right? The only way out of things that kill the spirit and then make us feel utterly alone is community. That's the only way. It's connection. Connection is the only way out.
And really this year, I don't know about it for you, but for me, the whole beginning of this, it was like it was going through stages of grief because you were letting go of the life that you knew and you had to find a new normal. This is another – there's all these buzzwords of 2020, the new normal. And you go through those stages and then you find your new normal and then there's another one and then another one. And I think if you can find those coping mechanisms that – aren't destructive but are supportive in a way, like, you know, having a Zoom with your friends or whatever it might be, just so that you can talk and get what's internal, external. I think that is super important. And there's other people I was talking to this week and I said 2020 has left a lot of people with a real tinge of PTSD. It just like, you know, there's so many, we've got a different lens on things now and the way we go about life. Like there's so many conversations I have where people go, oh, we plan to do this, but then we got COVIDed. And it's like, okay. So it's like so many, it's almost like we can't plan anything anymore. But I think I also spoke with a very successful entrepreneur who was all about planning and goal setting. And I'm like, how the hell can anybody set goals and plans at this time? And she said, just take it a day at a time, an hour at a time, set those goals, set those plans, and just get through the now.
That's right.
Mm.
That's right. It's kind of being able to hold both things at the same time, right? How do I hold my dreams for the future? And how do I hold myself together enough to get there? You know, and, one thing I do believe in is the resiliency of the human spirit. I do believe in that strongly. And I believe that, you know, if we are willing to get past the fear of judgment, the fear of where I quote unquote should be, or the dream that had to be put on hold, or the fact that I'm afraid and yet I've always been the person to never admit that I'm afraid, or the fact that I've slipped in my sobriety and everyone's using the COVID excuse. It's not an excuse. It's real. Everything is, we know it has been torn away. Everything we know it has been ripped away. And I don't just mean sobriety. I mean, for those clients out there that I have, they're struggling with eating disorder issues. They're struggling with mental health issues. And they're wondering why all of a sudden there's a surge in their depression and there's a surge in their feelings of suicidality. Welcome to the universe.
This is
something that if you are alive and you are breathing, you are feeling it at some level, even if it's subconscious. You know, if you are in any way in tune with the when you are actually staying present for the world around you, what you're tuning into is not a very good station, you know, in terms of what you're hearing. And I think that's another part of survival, to be honest with you, is when you're tuning into those stations, what are you listening to?
Yeah.
What station are you listening to? And I don't just mean an actual radio station, although that does matter. I mean, what are you allowing into that space between yours? Because we listen to our internal voice more than any other voice that's out there.
Yeah.
And if that internal voice tells you, well, why just give up now? I mean, honestly, really? Today looked just like yesterday. We're just going to look just like tomorrow. And yet, as we just talked about, this has constantly been evolving. This has constantly been changing. You know, at the beginning of 2020, you know, it was like the year of perfect vision, right? 2020, right? This is the year that's going to set your vision. I remember, you know, and continue to joke with clients of mine saying, I think I need a new prescription. I think I need a different pair of eyeglasses because this is not the 2020 that I was envisioning. And yet, if you really think about when it comes to resiliency and when it comes to, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say I'm grateful for this because I'm not. I'm making the best of this life and the best of this life for my clients as I possibly can. But when you were dealing with somebody, you were hearing about death tolls that are rising exponentially, when you are dealing with surges in depression and recidivism of, you know, all kinds of slips and all kind in all various forms of recovery. No, I'm not grateful for this. But I don't have to be grateful for it to get through the other side stronger than when I started. And what I have been faced with is a number of different lessons and challenges myself that have left me saying, "Walk. How are you going to walk somebody through this?" Because what you had to rely upon to give people as tools, you don't have anymore. That toolbox for yourself has also been, you know, kind of locked away. So for example, when you were saying, you know, getting on a surfboard and whatnot, awfully hard to do when the beaches are closed. Right. So then what do you do? You know, and there you go, back to resilience, back to the moment by moment, back to the idea of reminding one another, reminding ourselves that where we are right now is not where we're going to be. We've seen that change over and over again. I'm not trying to be Pollyanna about this, but I know this can't go on forever. So if we can endure the now and find out how to endure the now and stay connected through the now, those of us that can do that, those of us that establish our world in which we feel safe and connected and are able to say, I'm scared today. I'm feeling like crap today. I just needed to hear our voice on the other end of the phone today. As things start to lift, we are going to have made it to the other side of something that we never, ever thought we could. And when challenges come up in life from that point forward, I'd like to think that just as with PTSD, there will be this moment. And knowing that we were able to get through this means, holy crap, really? We got through that? We can definitely get through a breakup, right? We can definitely get through a, my boss was an asshole today. You know, we can definitely get, you know, these are the things, these are the moments, you know? And part of that isn't saying that those that, I mean, to me right now, the most courageous thing to do is to be asking for help.
Absolutely.
And not to be saying like, you know, well, I'm just, you know, I've got to be okay right now because I'm used to being the one that's okay. Or I'm just going to pretend like I am, you know, because that's my way of dealing. No one is okay right now.
No,
not in the general terms of what okay means, right? All of our lives have been affected to various degrees, and the level of loss and the grieving process that you're talking about is very, very real. And just as with grief, what do you replace him with? Right. So, you know, and that's really kind of where I think clinicians find their challenge and their work and their renewed passion for this work is finding what to fill those gaps with when people come to you and say, I have a giant hole in my gut and I don't know what to fill it with. And you acknowledge that giant hole and you don't expect for it to be filled tomorrow, but you get working on filling it with things that are going to help build upon, you know, these building blocks that are for now, but also for the future. Because this kind of resiliency is something that we never expected to be have thrown at us, but it's here. And so we have to respond to it.
Yeah. And finding those things to fill that hole can be the smallest things, but really anything that can bring you joy at a time like this, grab onto it.
I couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more. It doesn't have to make sense to anybody else, no. You know, at all. You know, it just as individualized as the work that we do, right? What do you do in a moment like this, you know? And there is no stupid answer. There is no wrong answer. You know, if it got you through today and it got you through today in a way where your coping mechanism was a healthy one today, oh my God, you are amazing. Mm. You're amazing for getting through today. And let's see what tomorrow brings, and then we'll get through tomorrow, you know?
Yeah. Now, can you tell me about some success stories that you've had in the work that you do?
Well, it's been a lot of walks of life, right?
Yeah.
Back to this point. Success stories in the work I do. I've worked with a good number of clients over the years, from the prison system to psych hospitals to children who had been abused and abandoned, mm-hmm. To the LGBTQ plus community, which continues to be so near and dear to my heart, and really continues to emphasize and teach over and over again the importance and the value of community that just does not get torn down, no matter how many challenges come their way. When I entered this work, I knew I wanted to be a trauma specialist. No trauma specialist ever becomes one without walking through fire.
Yeah.
And I did, and I decided that was going to be worth something, baby. That was going to be worth something. If I could walk through as much fire as I walked through in my life, I was going to teach somebody else how to walk through fire.
Yeah.
So what have been my greatest success stories? You know, some would say that, you know, working with the very people that I never envisioned in my life, it was not my life's goal or desire to work with famous people, to be a celebrity psychologist, so to speak, and to actually work with, you know, directors of some of my favorite movies, you know, people who I would die to see on stage. I'm now helping not fall off the stage.
Wow.
You know, but it's not the fame or the recognition of the individual themselves that have been the most successful. I think the most successful stories that I have that I carry with me in my heart every day, are those individuals who really have come to me, having experienced just incomprehensible amounts of trauma. From all different walks of life. And, you know, there are so many ways of identifying what trauma is, and that's a whole other podcast, you know, but from capital T trauma, physical, sexual, emotional, to being abandoned for who they are and their identity, and all of that. The success stories of helping somebody stand firmly in their identity, whatever that identity is, and saying, I refuse to live a life in secrecy. I refuse to live a life in shame. You know, watching somebody with an eating disorder eat and continue to eat, even though everything in their being tells them that that's not what they should be doing. Watching somebody, you know, gain traction in sobriety and learn those coping mechanisms when they were born into this world with all of the biogenetic indicators that said that, you know, they are the perfect candidate to die by age such and such because everybody else in their life has, to, you know, just people that enter healthy relationships and find love and believe that they're deserving of love, to walking people through, you know, the transgender process, and helping them love themselves. And not taking acceptance as the end all, and saying, "Oh well, I'm so glad to be accepted," but to say, "No, honey, no, acceptance is not enough." That's great. Acceptance is, you know, I accept the fact that there's traffic when I want to get to work today. Celebration of who you are and of what it took to get here. I think my greatest success stories really are when I watch clients celebrate themselves, when I watch them actually look at themselves and say, I am human. It's not about what I do. It's about who I am. And it's about no longer defining myself by the sum of my mistakes or by the sum of things that were done to me. It is those are things that occurred. Those are things that happened, but those are not definitions of me. And when I watch somebody define themselves by who they are, not what they've done or what was done to them, that's what it causes.
Oh man, I love that. I'm just sitting here listening to you and thinking, what an amazing human who actually gets to experience the entire spectrum of humanity, you know, the lows and the highs. And that in itself must be very, very trying yet rewarding.
Yeah, it's, you know, so many people have asked me throughout my career in this. You know, I started out doing this pretty young.
Mm.
This was a calling for me.
Yeah.
You know, I thought for a moment I was going to be a rock star.
Oh.
I did. I was actually offered a contract.
Oh.
When I was 19. And again, you don't come to walk me through your own fire.
Yeah.
So I knew then that if I were to accept that contract, it literally would have been signing my actual soul away.
Wow.
Where I was at that stage in my life and the work that I needed to do to be able to walk other people through what I walk them through now. You know, there's a whole kind of dedicational, you know, page or whatever, highlights, whatever you call them on Instagram, called Inner Rock Stars. And it's really about that. It's about, you know, rock star has nothing to do with, and although so many of them, my God, so many of them have influenced our world with through their music and their healing power. Music is just something that I could not live without. It lives in my veins. It's part of the oxygen I breathe. But my rock star is in this work, and that's really where I feel like I am. You know, I'm not on a stage. I'm not there for them. I'm there to be, and I'm there to teach other people how to be. And there's a lot of people that ask me, "My God, there's so many easier things that you could have done with your life." I said, "You're right. And easy just does not appeal to me. I don't want easy. I want real. I want real."
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's ultimately what it comes down to. Yeah, it's the highs and it's the lows, and you can't do this work unless you're invested. And you can't do this work unless you've got a really good, decent amount of self-care. So when I'm talking to people about what to fill that void with, I'm also, you know, I'm speaking to myself too. It's like, okay, how do you keep yourself going, doc? And you're going to keep, you know, because you have to have something to give, or you're looking into this big empty going, I don't know how to help you.
Yeah.
Because I'm in the big empty too. Finding all the different ways in which to connect spiritually with me, with my purpose, reminding myself that choosing easy is still a choice, and it's still a choice I will continue not to take, because the gratification and the gratitude that I have in this universe of allowing me to walk through hard, really, really hard with people, and getting to the other side of that. Watching people go from dying, whether it was even a soul death, you know, to actually living and thriving, that's a gift that I would bestow on anybody who's willing to work their ass off for it.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't come by way of, you know, laying in bed and eating bonbons, you know, but it's one of those life affirming things that go, yeah, you're doing the right thing, babe. You're doing the right thing with your life.
Yeah. You know? And, you know, talking of challenges, I'd imagine you go through so many, but I'm keen to know what the biggest challenge is for you in your work and how you overcome it.
Well, I think it kind of goes back to what I was alluding to just a moment ago, which is you don't get to come by this work unless you're willing to be human. And that doesn't mean leaning on your clients for support, and it doesn't mean, oh, you're bawling, let's get the, I'm all, you know, like, okay, who's taking care of who here?
Yeah.
You know, I'm definitely the one containing, I'm definitely the one supporting, but more than ever now, and more than ever is just the person I think I've always been, you know, clinically, when I found my voice and I really honed what that voice was and was unwilling to be anyone else, right? In the same way that I ask clients to do. And by not being willing to be anyone else, I mean, my mind is always open to learning, growing, show yeah. me, teach me. But of course, I'm talking about, you know, ethical change, the ethics, you know, that those aren't going to change. The core of me doesn't change. Remaining true to that core. Mm. That's, you know, I know who my core self is, and not getting rid of that or attempting to change that even if I could. Being human and being real and experiencing the pain because it's there, and knowing that I'm not just going home, washing that off and saying, okay, that's done, mm-hmm. you know, all in a day's work, you know, because it's not, it's, you know, it's, you know, I'm the kind of, the work that we do is, you know, getting that call at odd hours that says, I'm really, really sorry. And I say, well, I don't know what you're apologizing for. You're doing exactly what you're supposed to be doing. You're yeah. calling, you're asking for help, you know? The most challenging part of my work and how I get through it is by being as real as I am and as devoted as I am, and also maintaining self-care to be able to continue to be as I am and as devoted as I am. Because if there was ever a time to burn out, it would be now when the things that make someone ecstatic, you know, on a Tuesday by Friday are wiped away by just the amount they've endured and the amount they've taken in that amount of time and having the goal be smaller and smaller, having the goal be not ecstatic. We're good. We're good. And we're in this together. And so how I get through that, honestly, is by continually working on me.
Yeah.
Looking at myself, looking at the parts of myself that need gas in the tank.
Yeah.
You know, finding ways in which to support myself. I happen to be surrounded in my own small world as I've chosen it and as I built it, with people who love, respect, and appreciate me for what I do. And although they miss me terribly when nights go by and I am essentially, you know, at the quote unquote emotional ER, they know that I will come back, and I do come back, and I come back swinging, and I come back to my dogs, and I come back to my vinyls and building the vinyl collection that I've decided, you know, needed to happen. You know, it became a need. I needed to have a vinyl collection during this time. I decided that was something that I needed to do. So I've now collected a number of vinyls and, you know, playing a vinyl throughout the house, you know, dancing with my partner in the middle of the living room, being silly, reconnecting with those parts of me that are always there, that can be hidden underneath the pain, that doesn't just belong to me, but belongs to the people who mean like, because it's sacred to me. It's not something I jump off and wash away. But it's something that I do put in a little box and reopen it, and I'm ready to get right back into it. But the biggest challenge in doing this work, I think, for any healer who's really in it for the right reasons, is how to practice what I preach.
Exactly.
And I'm out there telling other people, you got to find it. You got to surround yourself with it. But I remind myself that, yeah, you too, kid. That's not just for them. It's for you too. And if you're making it part of their treatment plan, guess what? It's part of yours too.
Yeah.
You know? And so giving to myself what I give to others, I think it is really, you know, the only way through this. You know.
Yeah, exactly right. And, you know, I knew there was a reason why you and I connected, because, you know, dogs and vinyls, okay, you're in, you're totally in. and I think if I go back to my email that I sent you, I actually said the word "a hurt human hurts humans." And you just reminded me of that then. You can't heal others if you don't heal yourself.
That's right.
So it's all in that same circle. So, yeah, and there's so many different healers that I work with and talk to, and it's that same thing, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And having the willingness to say, right, just like what I'm saying about my aunt, you know, picking up that phone and saying, hey, not doing so hot today.
Yeah.
I really need to hear from you. Hmm. That, you know, even though I love, you know, one of my best friends, you know, of all time, moved to Nashville, and we have a very, very close friendship. And it's very, very easy for me to go, I'm fine. Hmm. I don't need to. She's having a, you know, she's dealing with her own stuff. She's got her own stuff going on. She's in the mental health field too. She doesn't need to hear from me. And then I go, shut up and call her. What the heck? What, are you kidding me? You know, and of course, the minute I do, it's, oh my God, I've missed you so much. I'm so glad that you called. You know, I've just been inundated and under work and yada, yada. And so it's literally one of those things of, you know, pushing myself to say, I'm not a burden on somebody because I'm calling them to tell them about my day. That's just me trying to act like in my own head for a moment, like I'm the only individual on the planet that doesn't need somebody else. And that's total BS.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a human and I need people. And more than anything now, I think it's the most courageous and honest thing to say that people do need people. Mm. We always have, but we are being smacked in the face with it over and over again that, yeah, we need each other. We're not going to survive this alone. And yeah, it's going to take more effort on our part than it maybe usually has, because we can't just say, oh, great, I got my fix of that, you know, person that I am so used to seeing. You've got to go the extra mile to find that person now and to reach out to that person now. And it's the only way we're going to survive it. And so I'm holding myself to that same standard.
That's so true. And you know how they talk about the five love languages?
Yes.
And so apparently my first one is touch, right? So I'm a big hugger, right? Love hugs. So, and some of my friends are the best huggers in the world. Anyway, when COVID came and we were told we couldn't hug, I went, oh, come on, seriously, really?
Right. Yeah.
For me, it was like, what the hell?
Yeah. Now you just shut down my love language.
Yeah.
Man, what the heck are you doing? Yeah. No, exactly. Mm. Exactly. No, that's so true.
Mm.
And, you know, it's, and for you, I would imagine too, it's like, you know, how do you get that same feeling without that actual physical touch? You know what I mean? But I'll tell you right now, as I speak to you, I promise you I'm hugging you.
Oh,
you're the biggest friggin' bear hug from the US. Like, you know, I don't know if you want anything from here right now, but I'm just letting you know, I'm sending it to you anyway.
I'll take it.
The biggest, warmest bear hug. I do believe that love transcends. I do believe that feeling transcends, and moving, you know, in my work into, you know, talking more internationally, working more internationally from a computer screen of all things, when I'm so used to that face-to-face interaction, I'm talking about being in people's homes and in their spaces and in their jobs. And now I'm doing that via a computer, and it feels very limiting to me in so many ways, you know, in the same way that not giving a hug feels limiting to you. You know, that is my way of hugging, you know, is by literally containing and holding these lives in my hands, you know, not being able to do that physically. Whereas before I would be taking a plane to Barcelona or taking a plane to, you know, Florence or take, now doing this from a computer. And it's like, okay. But you just, it's the limitations of now, but not doing it is so much more limiting than actually working within the limitations and pushing those limitations to our max ability. You know what I mean? Hugging with our whole heart and our full spirit when we can't with our hands and our arms. You know what I mean? I think that's honestly what I'm pushing myself to do, is how do I be all that I am with a screen in front of me, which I oftentimes wish I could throw across the room because of technology, because of, you know, all of the different, you know, text messages coming through while I'm trying to have another conversation, all these things that get in the way and get distracting. And ultimately, at the end of the day, the goal remains the same. And that is, you know, I'm going to connect regardless. I refuse to allow people who want connection to not have that from me because I'm stuck on it has to be to, the conversation we began with, which is that drop down menu, what it means to be individualized treatment, right? It's like, okay, no, treatment looks like this. Mm. It doesn't look like us talking on a screen. It looks like you are in this program and you have a group and an AA meeting, and that's what happens. You know, breaking out of that comfort zone for me and saying, okay, so you don't get to do what you normally do. You don't get to be on set because sets are closed down. You don't get to be in people's homes because they're terrified of COVID. You don't get to be. So what are you going to do? Mm. You're going to stop connecting, or are you going to learn how to connect even within this realm?
Yeah.
Even when it's this much harder to reach across the lines and say, I'm here.
Mm.
And, I'm just grateful for the opportunity to see it working, even in this realm.
Yeah,
that connection can be felt.
Absolutely,
you know, like I can feel a connection with you right now.
Yeah,
all the way where you are. I feel like I've known you for a really long time.
Yeah,
and I'm just talking to a friend.
Yeah,
you know,
same.
And that's the power of connection.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, and you know. And just out of interest, my coping mechanism through not having those hugs was my dogs got them all. So they were the most loved dogs in lockdown. I also made a habit of just locking in morning coffees through Zoom with friends, and we'd do it,
absolutely,
you know, every Wednesday we'd sit down and we'd catch up. And I learned so much about my friends that I did not know, like through those conversations, because we had to be real with each other. And yeah, it opened a side of me I'd never, you know, had with them too. So that was how I got through.
Yeah. It's a damn good way of getting through, you know. Dogs, vinyls, Zoom coffees, I mean, whatever it is, you know, we're just filling the spaces, you know.
Yep.
Oh, and that's the idea, you know, we find what works and we hold to it, and we ask others and invite others to do the same, you know, and it's not that the love language has to change. It just has to tweak a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, it's also a great time to find your purpose too. It's like, you know, how can I bring light out of this dark? And actually go, well, how can I help others through this now that I've found a way through? Which is what I started to do as well. And it helped me at the same time as helping others. So, yeah, if people are in that space, they can actually leverage from their own pain and help others.
That's exactly true. That's exactly right.
Mm.
That's exactly right.
Now,
I think that's really what we're really great at as human beings, honestly.
Yeah.
If we really, you know, leverage our strength and our courage to walk through pain, you know, courage isn't the absence of fear. You know, it's knowing and experiencing the fear and doing the damn thing anyway.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. So
you know, it's that's real courage.
Yeah. Now, we were talking about ethics before, and in your role, they'd be huge. But I'm interested to know, if you were to give me a definition of what being ethical is for you, what would it be?
It would be choosing the value of a human life over any financial amount that you can put on it.
Oh, I love that. Love it. Absolutely love it.
That's the most concise version I can give you.
I love that. Love it. Now, if people want to find out more about you and what you do, now you were saying that you can now, you know, connect with people internationally. So even where I am, how can people get in touch with you and find out more about what you do?
Well, so internationally, absolutely, would be LiveTreatment, LIVE, treatment, VIP.com.
Mm-hmm.
And there's literally, you know, concierge programs that can be put together that have everything to do with, you know, doing this strictly by Zoom. But there's also things that we are doing more and more of where I lead a team, right, and get to know the team of doctors, professionals, everyone involved in that person's life. and ensure that one hand is talking to the other and whatnot, and literally developing teams where they are. And I'm the hub of that team, making sure that everyone is talking and communicating and making sure that that person doesn't slip through the cracks. Developing the same sort of highly individualized plan as we have here, wherever they are. And that's been quite successful. We are boutique for a reason. I don't have 80 people out there doing this work. I take on a limited number of cases at a time because I'm going to give someone the best of myself. But in these teams that I have and these people whom I trust and whom I've trusted for years, vetted professionals, there's definitely help available from way across the miles. And then in terms of the brick and mortar facility, for those who are actually in the United States, revivedetoxlosangeles.com. That's the other way. That's the website. My face is very prominent on both. The phone numbers to each are clearly on there. I have two Instagram accounts that are linked to them. Mm-hmm. One being, live_treatment. That would be the way to get to, in touch with me directly.
Yep.
And I can be direct messaged. I can be emailed. I can be called. And any of those numbers of ways. I'm a typical person, to be honest. And if somebody just wanted to just ask me a question, as they often do, that's been one of the main ways in which people who haven't known of me before, have actually, gotten to know of this work that we do that is so important and so near and dear to my heart. But the main change really being, it has grown so much, like I said, going across the many miles and being called to go across the international and also across country, taking myself, meeting families, doing all these things face to face. The power of connection does not end because we can't be in the same room. We're in the same room right now. We're in the same room the minute we say we are. And we start solving problems together in that way. And so I'm availing myself and my team professionals that work with me, or just an external team, that can also interface and work with teams of people, that exist in people's home countries, hometowns, home states. It's definitely pushing me to the next level in that way. And I've definitely been working internationally more than ever before. Mm. And that's been a wonderful experience for me. Talk about getting out of your head a little bit and learning how the other half lives, it's rewarding. It's refreshing. There are things that I can offer from here that don't exist there. And it's always nice to get out of the, it's always nice to turn what's going on here in the US too.
Yeah. Well, I certainly hope, you make it down under, sometime soon, and now
I'd love to
for the all the right reasons.
Yeah, I would absolutely love to. It's definitely on the list of mine to travel and that's definitely on my hit list, so to speak. Just get rid of COVID for me if you could.
All right, I'll work on that.
You could just get busy doing that. The dogs. I feel like that's, it might be a tall ask, but I feel like someone like you is up for the challenge. So yeah, just end COVID and I'll come visit like right away.
Righto. Okay. Well, I'm all about ethical change. I'm sure I can do that.
It will end. This is going to come to an end, and so many others, but you're due for an in-person hug. When COVID ends, for sure. And I would love to do that. You and the dogs.
Yes. Yeah. All right. I'm holding you to that. Don't you forget that. It's on the record.
I won't. I promise. I'm a woman of my word.
Now, I've got the final big question for you, and this is my favorite. So I can't wait to hear your answer, okay?
Okay.
What's the change you like to see in the world, and how can we bring it to life?
Ooh, Okay. Well, I just asked you to end COVID, so I guess that's fair. the change I wish to see in the world. I would like to see the courage to listen, the courage to converse, and to be willing to learn about what we don't know, replace the fear that leads to the ignorance and hatred of the unknown. I think, you know, if we all spent more time, and I have no time for hatred for hatred's sake, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But when it's about having a different point of view, when it's about, you know, there are think tanks that are the reasons why we have cures, advancements. The world we live in today did not come from one person sitting down and coming up with an answer, or a bunch of like-minded people just nodding in agreement, you know, on a worldwide level. If we could get more curious and less fearful about what we are thinking and why, if we could be more interested in the change and the growth that comes out of understanding and admitting where we have failed. Because there is no success without failing first. Mm. You have to fail at something in order to advance and in order to succeed.
Yeah.
So if we could get honest enough and courageous enough, have conversations in which we are listening, not just winning, right? I think there's a lot of focus on winning. Mm. And I love giving credit to people when they've come up with quotes, and not only do I not remember who said this, but I don't remember if this is the exact quote. But I know that there is a quote that lives in my mind that says something to the effect of, as I will paraphrase it, do you want to be right or do you want to be successful?
Mm.
And that to me is what it comes down to. Is this about winning or is this about growing and being successful? So the world in which I live, the world in which I want the future to, you know, in my perfect world, would be a world in which we are less concerned about winning and more concerned about succeeding together as the people who are more interested in what one another has to say than walking through the fear that they may not be in agreement with us. And only then do I think that real change can occur.
Yeah, so true. Yeah, I always say there's no failures, it's just growth. And without that, we can't grow.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, absolutely. Let's admit, let's learn, let's listen, let's get courageous, let's get compassionate, let's be courageous enough to hear the things that scare the shit out of us, so that we can stop doing the things that are killing people.
Absolutely.
That's really, I think, at the end of the day, that's really the world in which I want to live, is amongst people who are courageous enough to say, I don't understand why you would feel that way.
Mm.
And instead of stopping the conversation there, say, tell me about it. Why? Why do you feel the way that you feel?
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean at the end of the day, we have to be friends. But if it is that people are making the decisions that they're making, if we don't understand why it is that things are occurring, nobody was born into this world with hatred in their hearts, with, you know, nobody, I don't believe that. So what put it there?
Mm.
What put the shutdown there? And so long as we continue the shutdown where nothing can, you know, be let in, where there is no light, there is no growth. So you have to break open in order to let light in. And in the world I live, I want to see hearts and minds break open and be willing to experience something that may be uncomfortable so that we can actually grow.
Yes. Amen. Oh, Renee, I could speak to you all day, seriously. It is like time has stood still, seriously. This has been absolutely beautiful. Thank you so much for your time today.
I am so honored. I'm so honored to be invited onto such an exceptional show. I'm so honored to be speaking to such an exceptional individual. And you can hold me to that hug, and you can hold me to that visit, because I can't wait. And in the meantime, let's just do our little part in staying, you know, connected.
Absolutely.
And in changing our world one little piece at a time, because it's going to be people like us that continue to do it.
Thanks for listening to the Ethical Evolution Podcast. If you're an ethical business owner, change maker, or holistic healer who's determined to make a change in the world and you need support to spread your message, visit ethicalchangeagency.com to collaborate.
Hey, it's Tim from 50 Years of Music with 50-Year-Old White Guys, the comedy podcast you had no idea you needed. Join Ben, Jeff, and me as we continue our musical road trip back through the years and around the globe. See, just when you thought all white guys were like Joe Rogan, you come across three educators trying to remember when we were cool.
50 Years of Music with 50-Year-Old White Guys.
Electric Acid.
Welcome to Ringside with Ray and Prince. My name is Ray Leonard Jr.
Oh, we got this chair. No, that's just my dad.
My name is Prince Daniels Jr.
Daniels again with a big home touchdown.
On this show, we come to humanize
athletes, entertainers, business executives. We're going to see what makes them tick.
Tuesdays, 10 a.m. Pacific time on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We'll see you there. Peace and power.
Electric Acid.
Electric Acid.